Welcome to Season 2 of Disability Bandwidth,
a show where we talk with experts in disability about their journey, life, and inspiration.
I'm Sam Pru.
And I'm Nikki Nolan.
Let's get started.
Do you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. My name is Joe Devin. I'm white, 55 years old, and I'm wearing a gray and black sweater on top of a white and blue polo shirt. And my hair is gray, betraying my age. And I'm in my office, so there's some white doors behind me.
Awesome. And do you mind telling us what your role is?
Sure. So I'm head of accessibility for Theorem One, and we are an innovation and engineering firm. And I'm also the chair of the GAD Foundation, which, since it is GAD now, you know exactly what that is.
Absolutely. Happy GAD. Do you often call it GAD, or do you always say Global Accessibility Awareness Day? For those who may not know, it is GAAD, Global Accessibility Awareness Day. Are you happy that it's become one of those acronyms where people say GAD, or would you prefer that people, you know, call it, spell it out, or call it the thing?
Oh,
or...
GAD, no. I like that it's GAD. It's
really there are tough. so many GAD puns you could make, right?
Yeah, it's when you're explaining it to new people and you have to keep repeating the whole thing. It's you know, you want to go Global Accessibility Awareness Day, but GAD for short, you know.
Yep.
Or, you know how lawyers, they put it in between parentheses when they're doing an acronym, and hence that means henceforth known as. I wish, yeah, I could do that in speech.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also great that when you're dictating to Siri or any of the software, it will sometimes hear GAD as God. So that is also...
That happened to you because you copied over the things.
Yes, I did.
It re-changed all the questions to, like, what were the key moments that led you to God? The co-founding God. So to bring us back a little bit, we always love to know sort of what lights a fire in you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I say innovation, and lately I've been excited about AI, artificial intelligence, and a lot of people have been bugging me about, like, well, why are you talking about this so much instead of accessibility? And I think people don't realize, at least in my mind, innovation and AI included and accessibility are all one package. So many of the research reports that are coming out are related to accessibility. So much of the really cool, interesting stuff that's been done are related to accessibility. The work that Karpathy, who headed up Tesla, one of the big things he did, I think, was image recognition and I think speech recognition. I don't remember, but I was looking at this the other day and I was like, wow, he did some really big seminal work there. And what is Tesla if not visual recognition, and then turning that into meaning? So it really is super connected. And I'm just amazed at what percentage of these research papers are touching our field. So I love it. And I think it's going to also create assistive technology for us, because there's something new coming out every day. And now there are tools that make it so much easier and very cheap to take a podcast and create a transcript out of it. You can do it from the command line within like 3 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And some things that I think, maybe you would agree with this, that people, I think, define assistive technology too narrowly sometimes, right? Like for me, as someone who is a completely blind screen reader user, these new search engines, there's a few of them out now that you can just type in a question and get the answer. For simple things are such a time saver for me, right? If it's just like some statistic about, like, you know, the ratio of men to women in a given field, or like whether this kind of elephant is an endangered species, or I'm just like trying to think through sort of all of the random questions that I can now ask as a screen reader user, where like before the answer wouldn't have been worth it to me to like go to some website and figure out the layout and scroll through the headings and find the thing. It's just so much faster. And I know, Nikki, you're finding some of these writing tools really helpful as well.
Yeah, being dyslexic, like Sam and I actually talked about this on our first episode, just like ChatGPT really helps me overcome some of my dyslexic hurdles, like where I'm able to write something out and then have it like mirror back. And then I'm able to like rewrite it and then run it through like Grammarly or something like that. Like these AIs are like, I always have seen my person as someone who really struggles to write, and I know that's like an internal thing for me, but ChatGPT is like giving me so much like the AIs are giving me much more confidence to be able to actually express what I mean, which is really nice.
Yeah. So Joe, as someone else who's involved in innovation and engineering and in thinking about these things and reading this research, I think there are so many great wins to be had integrating this technology into assistive technology, thinking of this technology as assistive technology, getting into the hands of more people with disabilities. But is there anything that worries you about AI in assistive technology or AI as assistive technology going forward? And what do you think are some of the things we need to avoid or some of the hurdles we need to overcome that worry you or that you think about?
Wow. That is, I'm not especially as worried about it in assistive technology as I am for everybody. The other day, I thought of a way, and you're going to hate this. I'm not going to share what, you know, I came up with a way of putting together what's out there today that is just so dystopian. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that thought of it. And it just completely freaked me out. And it's coming in a bad way. Like there's going to be a lot of bad things as a result of AI. And in the 90s, when the web came out, we were so hopeful. This was the great equalizer. Small businesses would be able to exist and proliferate. And then it turned out that we wound up with even bigger concentration of power and so much power removed from the individual. And as exciting as a technologist, as exciting as AI is, it's going to cause a lot of harm. I just don't know that it's necessarily going to be focused on our community. I think it's just going to be on everyone, and it's going to be about concentrating the power, which even there, like for me personally, I don't care if, you know, if there's large companies and they do really well. I'm happy for Sergey and Larry, wherever they are, for whatever they've achieved. But when it's turned against the individual, that's the problem. And the monopolies, it feels like the large businesses have taken every piece of margin out of every single business and not served the consumer well. And that's going to get a lot worse.
So what do you think, how do we strike the balance? How do we get the wins that can come from AI into the hands of people with disabilities while limiting the harm that AI can do to society? How do we set that balance? One example that I think about often is that the AIs that are getting better and better at image description will still not describe any image that they detect as containing adult material, right? And there are valid and legitimate harm reduction reasons to not let AI write and describe adult material. And yet there are accessibility reasons for it to do that. And so have you thought about, like, how do we strike this balance? Where do we sit?
I love that you brought that up. I've spoken about that. You know, I think I have a pretty clean image because I just try to do good stuff. But when it comes to this, I'm sorry, it just pisses me off. Like, you should not be using a tool that's creating captions, and you can't say, can I curse on this podcast?
Go for it.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. If you say shit, like, the captions should say shit. It shouldn't say ***. I mean, you know, come on. I mean, I can understand. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the people coding it. And I understand from their perspective that you want to have a very high confidence, because if somebody said sit and they wrote shit, then they're going to look pretty bad. So you do have to respect that. Maybe you could hike up the confidence level a bit and say, well, it has to be above this amount, but we're going to be faithful to the actual word. And yeah, I mean, why can't people with disabilities access adult content? It's, you know, who should govern that? I mean,
maybe some of it is about getting AI models in a place where they can be run and hosted locally. And I, as a person with a disability, can turn the knobs, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sam, you were talking about that, how you have had your own sort of like AI to help you describe things, and you run it locally. And I think that's really very interesting.
Yeah, I run a bunch of AI stuff locally, largely because, well, first of all, former crypto miner since 2012. So you get left with extra GPUs, right? But secondly, just because I have that privilege and the technical knowledge to, you know, install some Jupyter Notebooks and get Python up and running and TensorFlow and play with these things. That said, we've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole, but I think it's an interesting rabbit hole and an important rabbit hole. However, it is GAD, Global Accessibility Awareness Day. We've talked a little bit about it. I know you probably get asked this question 100 times, probably sick of answering it. But for folks who are maybe less familiar with Global Accessibility Awareness Day, could you give a little quick, short intro to it? And I think more interestingly and more importantly, what were the key moments that led you to co-founding Global Accessibility Awareness Day or GAD?
I don't mind being asked that question again, because maybe one day I'll have the perfect answer. I'll just get better and better at it. Sorry, stupid joke. The real thing, I'd say the preamble to it that first let me understand that accessibility even exists was a blog post by Mark Pilgrim. He had a blog called Dive Into Mark that was really fantastic, though I heard there was some controversy about his accessibility posts, but still that's what introduced me to it. Then I saw a screen reader demo by Victor Tsara, who was working at Yahoo at the time, and he showed with a screen reader how he would look at the homepage of Yahoo. And again, it's that innovation thing. As a technologist, I was blown away by this, but also in the back of my mind, I was like, wait, I'm usually on the bleeding edge of tech, and I never heard of a screen reader. The average web developer hasn't either. And it kind of percolated in my mind until one day my dad, who was in his mid-80s, and just, my dad was amazing. He spoke 10 languages, 11 if you include Aramaic, and he just commanded respect when he'd walk in a room, and he couldn't bank because the bank was inaccessible. He had gotten phished. The bank sent him an email. He couldn't read the email because the colors were off. And I just felt, you know, it's funny. I actually thought the right thing legally. I was like, this is a human right, a civil right. If you can't bank, then independently, you're not independent anymore. And my dad should be allowed to bank. And so I wrote a blog post proposing that we create a Global Accessibility Awareness Day, and the rest is history.
How did you meet up with Jennison? I'm really curious, since you are both co-founders of this.
Yeah, so I wrote the blog post on mysqltalk.com, which had gotten maybe 10 viewers ever. And I wasn't even smart enough to tweet it out, but WordPress did it automatically. And he saw the tweet. And he comes on to the blog, and you can see the whole history right on the page to this day, where he's like, hey, this is a great idea. Let's make it happen. And then he got me on a Skype call, and then he said, hey, I'm going to be at the CSUN Disability Conference, which is not far from you. Why don't you come out? And met him there. And he was already a legend. I was in Starbucks, and he calls, like, in line there in the hotel. And he calls me up, and I say, hi, Jennison. And then people in the line there were like, oh, you know Jennison? And now
it's that feeling. Everyone knows Jennison. Some people are the connectors, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jennison is the Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
So I would really love to know, what outcomes have you experienced in creating GAD over the last 12 years?
When we started, and I got to learn the community, everybody was depressed. They were like, we've been doing this for a decade or decades, and nothing's ever going to change. Nothing changes. And the enthusiasm is completely different today. People actually believe that change is going to happen, that things are going to get better. Are they all there? I mean, it felt like 10 years of it getting better and better and better. I'd say that this year has been a little bit more challenging because there were a lot of layoffs and a lot of layoffs in the accessibility community, but the growth had been really, really big until then. And I believe we're going to come back from that. So I'd say that's in terms of outcome. There are more than I can even begin to say in terms of events that happen that were cool. So one of them is Sir Tim Berners-Lee co-keynoting with Jennison. I thought that was pretty awesome since he invented the World Wide Web. Then we've got Stevie Wonder gave a concert at the Apple campus for GAD. That was amazing. Mike Shabanek, who's really the force behind voiceover and really this industry. And I hit him up and I said, hey, I have this idea for a GAD pledge to make open source projects accessible. And he instantly said, all right, Facebook, we're gonna take the pledge to make React Native accessible. We're gonna make a commitment. And then I'd say the last but not least, and there's plenty more, was the Xbox Adaptive Controller was released on the day of GAD, and they later turned that into an amazing Super Bowl commercial. So that was a great one.
And now a really quick break to hear from our sponsor.
Hello, my name's Sam. I'm a full-time magnification user and a member of Fable's community of accessibility testers. If you're listening to this podcast, you already know just how important it is to integrate the voices of people with disabilities into every aspect of your product development journey. Fable can help you do that. From improving your team's accessibility training with Fable Upskill to working directly with assistive technology users with Fable Engage, we can help you take the next step in building amazing websites and apps that are accessible and easy to use for everyone. To learn more, check out what we do at www.makeitfable.com and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
And we're back. Let's get into this. How do you feel the community has evolved? Did you discover it or did you create one? Tell me about that journey.
You know, when you go viral, I think it can be hard sometimes to pinpoint why. And obviously, Jennison had a lot to do with it. Without Jennison, this would never have gone the way it did. I think he had the ear of the community. And I think the other side of it is that I was a web developer. I think the community thought that web developers, because it was much more web than mobile, the web developers didn't care. I think that was really the impression. And here you have a web developer proposing this, and it was really realizing that we were ignorant and not we didn't have malice. We just didn't understand it. And the community saw that. And I think that that's what really helped, that combination of me and Jennison kind of helped tap into a vein. To me, virality is not about what you create. It's about tapping into a vein of what's going on in the culture. And that's all that really happened. And the community is the reason for GAD. Without the community, there is no GAD. And I always just say it's a bullet train, and Jennison and I are just trying to hold on to the train. That's it. You know, we're trying to drive it to some degree in the sense that a lot of folks like to take the popularity of it and put their own pet cause behind it and say, you know, GAD would be great if only you did my idea. So you do have to make sure to kind of steer that direction on digital accessibility. But other than that, it's really the community, the grassroots.
How do you do that? Because GAD has been very successful and very popular and very large. And now it has a foundation, and it's been going on for over a decade now. And I think we've all seen, without naming names, we can probably come up with examples of days and of things that maybe weren't what they used to be, or that maybe have been co-opted among something else. So how do you think about steering something and keeping it going in the right direction without being restrictive or controlling and leaving global accessibility where it must stay open for everyone who wants to participate?
I learned a lot. I'll be very honest. Jennison understood this. He understood what it has to be all the way. It was very opinionated on it. And I really have been following his lead, and it taught me how important it is to understand what your vision is and stick to it and don't let anybody pull you aside. And there's a lot of people that want to do that, and you have to really stick to your guns. So I'll have to give that credit all the way to Jennison. I would have made a lot of mistakes, frankly.
Well, I feel like we do learn from our mistakes, and it has been very interesting. You know, you start with an idea and it evolves and grows, and now you have this foundation. Was there anything like sort of along this journey that really surprised you?
The whole thing? You know, the way I try to just distill it, like what happened here? And it's really, if you combine a vision with the community, you can do anything. But you have to have the vision and you have to tap into the venue of the community. And then it's just incredible. And there's lots of problems that we've got in society today. If we define the vision correctly and tap into that community, I feel like we can solve a lot of these things. Just to give you an example, and I keep wanting to sort of do something about this, maybe write a book or something. But we were talking earlier about how the web was supposed to be something that worked well for the small business, and we lost it down the road. I think that somebody can come out and say, hey, why don't we start to do grassroots and take back this, like bring back small business? We're never going to do that on the federal level. We're not even going to do it on the state level, but on a local level, if we as a community come in and say, we're going to run for local office, we're going to push laws to allow for just, let's say, pick a street. This street is going to be small business only, right? And you get a lot of people, you make this, you know, viral, popular, you write a book or something like that, and the whole community goes behind it. You can start to see that grassroots, and then eventually it can turn into a lot more, but you've got to start that on the local level. And you got to get the people behind it. So that's an example of a vision where I always thought, you know what, that could be something, you know, as a follow on to GAD. But I'm sharing that because it doesn't matter. That's my idea. Every one of us has lots of ideas and vision. And this is a formula. Take whatever you care about that you think is important to the world and bring it to community, because maybe you'll create the next GAD and it'll be on some other topic. And you know, and I hate to say this because I used to make fun of the developers that said, I want to change the world, and they'll join a company that just, you know, stamps out the small business, right? But yeah, you can change the world if you get that vision right and tap into the community.
So I think that's valuable to dive into a little bit more, and it kind of dovetails next into kind of one of the next questions, because there is this pushback, right, against whether it's the developer or anyone who comes in and says, I want to change everything. I want to build a big thing and we're going to change the world. And there is kind of that feeling of, oh, yeah, sure, right. But Global Accessibility Awareness Day did in a real way. And so for people who want to change the world, for people who do want to do this, what advice would you have for them? If they maybe haven't started the thing yet and it's still in the ideation stage, what would be the advice you'd give to these people who are passionate about how they should take their passion from great idea to a thing that will actually be effective in doing the thing that they want to do?
Ego makes a huge difference, because if you're coming in with this and you feel like it's yours as opposed to creating something for community, you're never going to succeed. If you come out and you say, I'm going to change the world, like there's a lot of ego in that. Whereas instead, you're just saying, hey, here's an idea, and then maybe do some work. It didn't start. It wasn't the blog post that 10 people read that turned into GAD. Jennison, I did too, but Jennison just knew the community. We did a lot of outreach to inform people about the day. And it was really necessary in the first year. We did it in the second year. And after that, we were just trying to keep up. So there was a lot of work, but it was also, it was presented to serve. And I always feel very funny and shy when people are thanking me for GAD, for example, because it's the community that did it at the end of the day. And I don't know how to explain it, but it just doesn't feel right to me. And I feel very awkward when people thank me for it. I don't know how to explain it, but you have to approach it with humility, or it's just not going to work, because people know when it's fake, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't identify as a person with a disability, correct?
Correct. Though I'm 55, so
yep.
I have clouds in front of my eyes that are like waves. So when I'm turning my face, I have to let the clouds kind of go by. It's really hard to see. The color contrast is really difficult for me. Need to up the font size. And then the hearing is just not what it was in my 20s, especially in a crowded restaurant. So I won't say I have a disability, but I think that we should change the way we define disability, because or let's put it differently. Accessibility impacts lots of people that don't fit the definition of having a disability, right?
Yep.
So mm-hmm. might be a reason to define disability the way the WHO has done, but for accessibility, we need to go wider than that.
And there's also something important to say about how people with disabilities are ultimately all people at some time in their lives, whether in the past or the future. But
I mean, no, we're people all the time, Sam.
Yes, like all people are. No, what I'm getting at is that all people will experience disability.
Potentially in the past. Oh, that makes more sense. I thought you were saying that disabled people are sometimes. Totally.
I mean, personally, I'm not a person yet. No, I'm kidding.
It happens. We had Christopher Patino on last season, and I feel you two got into, we talked about it on the episode about a disagreement in the numbers and like data and like stuff like that. That was really interesting. Have you come to some resolve since that last year's sort of conversation online?
I don't know that we wound up super disagreeing. I think, you know, I was going with a larger number that a return on disability came up with. And he felt that the numbers that the WHO did were more real. And he said, we're doing a disservice if we aren't like exact with the numbers, if it isn't real and we're trying to sell something by going with bigger numbers, we're doing a disservice to everyone. And I agree with that. Where I think we need to look at it differently is just defining accessibility differently than disability. And I'm doing some work on this actually, and I don't want to talk about it till it's done, but
People can look out for it.
Absolutely. But hopefully we'll be able to separate it out a little better soon. I'm glad you asked this question, because it brings up another point. I've noticed that we get less engagement from the deaf community in terms of GAD, and it took me a while to understand why, but I do have friends that I've made as a result of GAD who have participated. But I've noticed that in the deaf community, there isn't a discussion of disability. It's much more about differently abled. And it also took me a while to understand why this was. And what my friends would keep saying is the hearing community always wants us to come to them. They don't want to come to us and understand us. And what it really is there are benefits with deafness. If you're signing and you don't have a verbal language, it's completely different. You have a visual language. And when you're signing, it's much quicker across the room. You don't have the cross chatter and your brain develops differently. And maybe what it is that people don't want to give that up. You know, there was a whole development. Your brain has maybe room for more things because there isn't that hearing element. I don't know if it's that, let's say the blind community and the deaf community, I don't know if they diverged for a cultural reason or if they diverged because it's just a different kind of, I don't even want to say disability, but a different kind of sense, right? And I'm not trying to say this as an answer. I'm more asking the question, and I'd love to hear other people come in and educate me and us.
I mean, there's also a different kind of communication, right? Blind people do, I think you could probably notice this, having probably met a number of different blind folks over the course of your life, Joe.
Yes. Nikki,
I certainly can. Blind people have very specific ways of communicating at some times. Mm-hmm. And the way that blind folks communicate is, how do I say this? It's not like a different language. It's not like signing, right? Like it still fits within so-called able-bodied society.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the way that deaf folks communicate, it doesn't, I think, fit into, quote unquote, fit into that as easily, right? You need interpretation or you need to learn sign language. And B, there is something to be said for any culture that has its own language, right? Look at, for example, here in Canada, if you look at kind of all of the laws and things that we have in place to protect the French language here in Canada, because folks realize that if French people lose their language, they will lose their culture. And so there seems to me, from the deaf folks that I know and from the signing folks that I know, a very different kind of culture that comes with having your own language. And we see that not just in the disability community. We see that not just in the deaf or hard of hearing community. We see that in any community that develops its own language. Those are at least my thoughts on it.
Interesting. And I wanted to, like, when you were talking about how you've seen people in the deaf community say that, like, people don't the bridge isn't created there. I also feel that I'm neurodiverse, or neurospicy, as I've been calling myself lately, even though Sam is like, I don't know about that. I feel like I feel excluded a lot from a lot of things because I communicate differently. I also dyslexic and like all these different things. I feel very like it's harder for me to like come into the community because I have different methods of communication that I feel like are in alignment with like mainstream. Like I didn't learn to read till 11th grade and nobody noticed. Nobody noticed because I was memorizing visually the words, but I didn't like, yeah. Isn't that, it's just very fascinating to me. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm just like, I do think that like each community has like variations. And I do think we do a disservice not figuring out how to work together. And that's sort of like why Sam and I created Disability Bandwidth was we have very different disabilities. We wanted to talk to like the broad like bandwidth, throwing that word out there, of people who have all these different lived experiences and really learn. And like, I'm open to learning. We're all open to learning. So yeah.
We also get the privilege as people who are blind that very few other folks get, other than perhaps maybe folks who are using stuff like Dragon and voice access technology, of in digital accessibility for blind folks. Does it work with a screen reader? Does it not work with a screen reader? Is easier for people to get their hands around and to test. Now, of course, automated testing doesn't solve the problems. It doesn't account for the experience, but there is a way in which it's easy to rationalize, oh, we can just run automated unit tests in our dev cycle and everything will be perfect and fine. Whereas like, what would be the automated test to make sure that something is accessible to someone with autism, right? Like what would be, I don't know, Joe, you're a developer.
No,
what's the unit test, right?
No, we've had this conversation, you and I, Sam, like in like, you know, there's a lot of assistive technology testing things just like Fable, who is our sponsor. But like, there's not a lot of neurodiverse because we are all so different. I mean, every single disabled person is a, you know, like their own unique experience and you can't generalize that. But how do you test for the wide range of dyslexia, the wide range and the spectrum of autism? How do you make principles and test things with scalable. Sorry.
Yeah, I think AI might, I mean, I hope that AI is going to provide the answer to that, to individualize it and to solve for it. But I also wanted to comment, Sam, that was great what you were describing in terms of the culture. That's such a good point. I totally missed that. And thank you. Like I've learned a lot just from hearing that, but I want to point out two other things. So one is, if you are in the deaf community and you're viewing yourself as differently abled, and then you have the WHO defining you as disabled, you'll be kind of offended, right? And I think that that's a problem with the statistics as well, because it's like, well, you're not meeting me where I am. This is your definition. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I just wanted to point that out since we're talking about statistics. But then I have a question for you, because I have some blind friends who tell me that they would not take it if they would be able to get an operation tomorrow and get the eyesight back, that no, they wouldn't take it. And the reason for it is also about the brain, the neuroplasticity, that, okay, now I've got different senses that I use and I don't want to lose that. My brain has just evolved differently. And I wonder if there's some piece of it is just identity and some piece of it is not wanting to lose the brain power that is different. So.
Some bits of it are identity. Some bits of it are just like, I mean, I'm in my mid-30s. I'm not interested in going back to kindergarten tomorrow and learning to point at something blue, right? Like it's just not, it would feel like a lot of learning. And then like, oh, well, my sight was restored, so I'm not disabled anymore, so I'm not going to get any more support, right? Because, but like, I haven't been doing this for 35 years. But I think it's also cultural in that we have built a world that I think prioritizes vision above hearing in a great many ways. So for example, it is, if you are someone who is blind, you can't drive a car. You probably can't follow a lot of TV shows unless they have audio description. You can't make eye contact with folks. You can't do all of these things. Whereas if you are deaf or hard of hearing, you can still drive. You can still travel easily. All you need for the TV is like captions, maybe. But like if you're watching a picture without captions, it's probably easier to follow sometimes than like listening to something where there's no dialogue, right? Mm-hmm. We have a society that prioritizes vision in a way that if you can't see, society in some ways has disabled you more or perhaps differently than society has disabled folks who cannot hear. And so I think that's a lot of too where the differences in nomenclature come, right? Because if you can think about just one thing, for example, if you can drive, think about how much easier it is for you to get a job. Think about how much more jobs are open to you, right? Like Lyft in the United States, there's a great many deaf and hard of hearing folks who drive for Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
It's not open to you if you're blind, right?
Yeah.
And so I think deaf folks don't feel sometimes disabled in the same ways that blind folks do or can. And like, that is entirely an artifact of society, right? If you look at Europe, they're not a car culture. Everybody walks to the store anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, like there are definitely cultural aspects to it. But also there's in not wanting to have your sight restored, or I think have your hearing restored, how much of me is wrapped up in not being able to see? And how much of me is external to that, right? Like if I had grown up seeing, I'd be playing soccer, right? I don't, because I wasn't really interested in adapted soccer and I couldn't play with the other kids. So I read and play with AI models in my spare time, right? But like, who would I have been? And the answer is unknowable, right? So I think there's some fear there too. Anyway, this is a fun rabbit hole that we could talk about.
No. It was a really interesting, it also triggered a lot for me, and now I'm going to talk about myself for a hot second. But like, there was a few things that came up, like that idea of disabled versus differently abled, and like how a lot of the community has been trying to get, like, disability is not a bad word, and like, define yourself as disabled. But I have come across a lot of people who prefer the differently abled, and I know that is like, in contradiction to what I've heard broadly as a community, as like the preferred definition of it. But then I also really wanted to touch upon this like curing culture. Like we have this, I even went through this. So being dyslexic, they thought I was ADD. It's not ADD. I mean, ADD and autism, ADHD and autism can manifest very similarly, but they like constantly were trying to cure me as a child. Like, and I was very resistant to that. I'm like, I like the way my brain thinks. I'm fine with the way that I think. I don't think I am the problem. I think the way that society forces me to fit within their system is the problem. And I think a lot of my identity is like, this system doesn't work. Let's burn it to the ground. But because I've just come from like, I went to seven schools by eighth grade because like, I just kept failing out of school. And when we, you know, prioritize a generalized experience of like how people are supposed to go through the world or show up in the world, we get to this thing where we other people and say, how you are is not okay. And let's try and fix it. Let's try and like cure it. Let's try and like create these assistive technology that are more cure oriented and less like assistive oriented. We actually had a really great conversation with Elsa Hunasan last season about that, about like this cure culture that happens. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I just wanted to like throw those two things, like the describing of disability versus differently abled and like cure culture and how that is just incessant in our society.
Well, if you notice, everything you described is how you would speak about any artist of note. Everything you said, that's an artist. An artist will not fit in, will see the world differently. And it's the artist that can inspire like no one else can. I have chills just talking about it because, you know, if you're an artist and you view the world in a different way and you can bring that to the world, you're giving a gift that no one else can, that is just fitting in. So treasure it. And we all have to respect that. I just love it.
It's interesting. I am an artist. So I don't know if I'm an artist because of my disability or if I am a, or if like, you never know. It's all intertwined in there. But we are getting really close to the end. Sam, do you have anything that you look like you might have wanted to add something to it before we get?
So I think as we draw to a close, it is important and useful to bring this back to Global Accessibility Awareness Day, because I think, Joe, for you, that is where all of these learnings kind of came from. And so how has it changed? And I think it has changed the way you maybe even describe yourself as an ally, or think about allyship, or think about yourself as an ally. How has that changed over the years? And what advice would you give to new folks who are just starting out kind of on the journey of learning about disability and of allyship and of being part of this?
It's completely changed. I've just learned so much from this community, and it's, you know, my life's work, the best thing that I've ever done is most certainly GAD. I wouldn't even know where to begin. I mean, it has just shaped my thinking. And I've always felt that it's about perspective. You have to put yourself in someone else's shoes to understand and be very liberal about that. I really try to put myself in anybody's shoes when you think about prison, what is it like to be in prison? And if you don't do that, you can't go beyond what you're thinking. You're just living inside your own world. And then in terms of what other people can do, just in a very practical basis, especially on GAD, is check your website for accessibility, navigate without a mouse, check your work's website. If you're hiring a developer, talk to them about accessibility and ask them to make sure that your site or your mobile app is accessible. Caption your videos. That's not hard to do today. Use alt text in your social media if you're going to post a picture. That's something almost everybody's doing social media, and a lot of people are forgetting that alt text. Add that. And then if you want to go a little bit further and you want to take courses and learn, if you're a programmer, for example, I think DQ University is one of the better ones for developers. WebAIM also has a great course. Nobility does training, and W3C does as well. So I think those are some good resources that are appropriate for GAD.
Amazing. Thank you so much. As we come to a close, this has been a wonderful conversation. If people want to keep the conversation going, want to follow you, where might they find you?
So I'm at Joe Devon, JoeDevon on pretty much all social media that I'm on. That's the username. And if you've got any AI accessibility related projects, would love to talk to you work-wise. And that email is joe.devon, joe.devon at theorem.co, theorem.co. Love to hear what you're working on. I'm playing with some concepts too. So just want to know what's going on out there.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. This was so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thanks so much for being here today. It's really great to keep the connection between this podcast and Global Accessibility Awareness Day going, and to have the second co-founder on for our second season of the podcast. So you will need to get a third co-founder for us for next season. No, I'm joking.
You can ask Mindy. She designed the logo.
There we go.
Yeah, she was a front end developer, not really designer at all, and designed the logo, and it's, you know, famous logo right now. So she'd be a good one.
Well, happy GAD. Happy GAD, everybody.
Thank you. Happy GAD.
Thanks for listening to Disability Bandwidth. If you like this episode of Disability Bandwidth, please subscribe and share it with friends and family. Today's episode was hosted by Sam Prue and Nikki Nolan, edited by Nikki Nolan. Transcripts are written by Emma Klauber.
The theme music is created by F.A. Achman. Special thanks to everyone at Fable, who, without their support, this show would not be possible. You can find out more about Disability Bandwidth on Twitter and Instagram at Disability Bandwidth, or on our website, disabilitybandwidth.com. Thanks for listening.